station.
710 ESPN Seattle.
More Seahawks. More Mariners. More everything Seattle sports. KIRO AM Seattle.
You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show. Serviced by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, 710 Sports app. What else can I say with 710 in it?
Seahawks finished the season 7-10.
Show used to be on 7-10. And somebody said, let's make this thing start at 6. It's worked out well for Maura today. Poor Maura. Everyone has to be nice to Maura today, including me and especially me. She has had a rough night, not enough sleep. Good morning, Maura. You okay today?
I'm good.
Harrowing experience last night.
Some drunk man thought that he, or thought his grandmother lived where I live. She does not. But he would not take that for an answer.
Banged on your door for how long?
Started at 2 a.m. Oh, I think finally when he started like bull rushing my door, I called the police. And then I think they came and it was taken care of by like 2:30 or so.
Jeez. I assume you go back to sleep after that or you just lie there with your heart beating incredibly fast for the next 2 or 3 hours.
We get up so early. My alarm was going to go off in like 45 minutes. Ugh. So I tried, but the adrenaline was pumping.
That's terrible. All right, nap time for you today, and also apartment hunting on the docket immediately for Morris.
But most importantly, you being nice today.
Yes, all right. It starts with me being nice, then a nap, then apartment hunting for Maura. So, yeah, that sucks, man. I'm sorry. That is a crazy experience. Maura was telling us the story in great detail, and it is...
Well, just when you wake up to the sound of someone trying to get a key in the door and you live alone at 2 a.m., that's not... Yeah, that's
I don't
scary.
Care if you live alone or not. I get the shivers just thinking about that, honestly. Like, the idea of somebody putting a key into the door where I am, whether you're in a hotel or your house or whatever, like, no thanks, man. You keep a bat or anything in your house just in case?
I have a stun gun.
Oh, really? Did you have that out?
Because when I take Bruin out at night, I take it with me.
So did you have that out?
I mean, yeah, but I had to go. I should keep it in my room. It was up by the door. So I was like, as I was going to turn the lights on and, you know, slowly walking towards the door, I was reaching for it. But I was like, why do I not have this in the bedroom?
You got to have that thing close by just in case.
You live and you learn.
There you go. All right. Well, Maura, I promise to be nice. Justin, you're responsible for making sure I'm nice.
I got it.
Cool. So if I'm not nice, remind me and I will immediately correct that.
Let's play a buzzer.
Extra nice to Maura today. Well, this is sort of about you guys. This is a Mike Salk podcast review that I will read you. Please go to download the show, and you can subscribe Apple Podcast or Google Podcast. I love the reviews. If you don't mind, I feel like we're getting close to 4.7. There've been a ton of people. I've seen the numbers growing over there. Reviews, we're at like over 300 reviews now.
I was gonna say, how can you feel it?
I can feel. Well, I can see. Like, there's been a lot of nice things people have said in the written ones, and I can see the numbers going up. So I feel like maybe we're getting close to having enough critical mass to getting to 4.7. So if you guys could help out, if you do listen to the show, via on demand, please leave us a review. Anyway, this one comes from Sonics for Life, Sonics 4LF. As any longtime listener knows, it's hard to get past Mike Salk's call screeners. Not because he doesn't love talking with his audience, but because the sound of his own voice is just a bit more important. That's true. I think we can all agree. But it's not impossible. If you're ready to get on the air, chop it up with Mike, Maura, and Justin, here is your surefire way onto the show. You ready? Mike Salk's top 10 favorite types of callers.
Oh, wow.
Number 10.
Oh, wow.
Admit that the officials were responsible for the outcome of the game. That's not true. That's not how I feel. That one is a no. Number 9. Come ready with all of your hot takes about high school football recruiting. I didn't even like Brock mentioning the kid in high school yesterday. I like, you've got to draw a line somewhere. I draw mine with knowing who college people are, and even that's iffy for me. I don't want to know who high school kids are. I feel like they should be in anonymity for the most part. Number 8. Understand that Mark Rogers, Russell Wilson's agent, is less of an agent and more of a father figure. I actually kind of agree with that. I mean, like, I think that's actually kind of true. Maybe not the best kind of father figure.
Will you reset this list again? These are the top 10.
Top 10 Salk favorite callers.
Salk favorite callers. Yes. Yep. Yeah, so far got it.
Put your tiny hand in mine. Number 7. Take a 14-yard sack on 3rd and 6 while just inside field goal range. You know, somebody did that this year. I wasn't wild about it.
Bell.
Yeah, all right. Number 6. Sing the praises of legendary boxer Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather's about as bad a human as it gets, yeah. Right? Can we all just agree that Floyd Mayweather's the worst?
Yeah.
The absolute nadir of awful. Yeah. Okay. Number 5. Appreciate the candor of Doug Baldwin.
I love Doug Baldwin.
That one cracks me up. Yeah, that'll get you past Justin Amora. I don't know whether it'll convince me of anything. Number 4, consider Bruce Arians among the best NFL head coaches of all time.
Yes.
At what?
Yeah.
Number 3, be biased, very biased. And number 2, your favorite quarterbacks are, in order, Matt Stafford, Derek Carr, Aaron Rodgers, and Ben Roethlisberger. That's a group I love, let me tell you.
And then, can throw Josh Allen in there, too.
Yeah, I'm going to have to come around on Josh Allen when it's all said and done, apparently. Number 1, waste your timeouts. That's it. These are the keys to getting on the show. And if you follow this advice, Justin Amora will prioritize your call, guaranteed. Go Hawks.
A lot of thought that went into that.
A ton, right? So I really appreciate it. Thank you, Sonics for Life. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the review. And for everybody else who wants to listen to the show, go subscribe on demand at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you do it. Even Spotify, that'll work as well. I guess apparently you can't leave reviews at Spotify, so you'll have to then go to Apple Podcasts to leave the review or something like that. Hall of Fame voting yesterday. We'll talk some Seahawks and stuff, obviously, today. Matt Hasselbeck will be with us at 9 o'clock. I got to tell you, I really was bummed out that Bonds and Clemens didn't get in yesterday. I really thought it was close. I knew they weren't probably going to get in, that they would end up falling just short. Maybe if they had one more year of eligibility, it would get done. But it didn't this year. And so David Ortiz is the only one who goes in. I kind of have two thoughts on this. One, I'm bummed that Bonds and Clemens and others didn't get in. Those guys are Hall of Famers, right? And I guess I can always say the fact that they're in or out of the Hall of Fame doesn't change my memories of them and the enjoyment I had of watching those guys and the way baseball was at that era. That's my primetime era of baseball. I mean, I've loved it my whole life, but if you ask me sort of when I was most passionately involved and invested in baseball, it was the steroid era, right? Starting when I was in college and kind of continuing through when I got into this business, it's when baseball probably was at its peak for me. And I saw some folks tweeting about this yesterday, and I would absolutely concur. It does feel like for those of us who were obsessed with the game in that era, you're marginalizing our experience and what we all watched because it doesn't work for a, 75-year-old sports writer. And I think that's a shame. I think those guys belong in the Hall of Fame. They were the absolute best of their era. And I guess the fact that they're not in doesn't change my memories, but I do think it sort of invalidates it in some way. So that stinks. Number 2, I hope the sort of fuss around Bonds and steroid stuff doesn't detract from David Ortiz, who should be a Hall of Famer in every way. He was remarkable. Remarkable player, interesting human being, fun to be around, said so many. I mean, I had the privilege of covering him for a couple of years. He was a riot. Like, just the presence that he had when he walked into the room was unbelievable. And he'd just hold court and be entertaining and be fun. And there aren't enough guys like that in baseball anymore. When we talk about what you're looking for in the game of baseball today, it's another David Ortiz, right? Somebody who's got that kind of a, first of all, the build, the presence when he walks in, the sense of humor that he had, the joy with which he played the game, and then just the unbelievable big moments and carrying his team to a couple of World Series. David Ortiz is a legend in every way. And when you think about the future, I hope that Julio Rodriguez ends up having some of that. And I think if there's a comp for him, not body style, not style of play, but maybe just in terms of the personality.
The aura.
Yeah, I hope he's got some David Ortiz to him. I hope that's what we end up being in store for with Julio Rodriguez, because there may very well be some of that to his game. All right, coming up next, a little bit more on David Ortiz, on the Hall of Fame, and some great news coming out of the negotiations. We'll tell you everything you need to know next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, it's a big morning here on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. We have a peek into some voicemails coming up at 7:30. Where are we looking today? The quarterbacks?
Yeah, so it's pretty much the only quarterbacks left in the playoffs. Okay. They have some, I don't want to say revealing, but revealing voicemail messages.
Oh, good. I can't wait to hear about it. We will
surprise who called them.
Do that coming up this morning at 7:30. Right now, let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
NFL free agency doesn't start for, well, a couple of months, March 16th. And when it does, the Seahawks need to handle it differently than they have in the past. There is almost no doubt that their approach to free agency since 2013 simply has not worked. A credit to Michael Sean DeGar. Asked the question yesterday, when have they exited free agency appreciably better than they started it? Anyone want to try to answer that one? Best I can do is 2013 when they brought in Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett. What free agent, not a trade, since then has had the most impact on this team? I can barely think of any. DJ Fluker? Gerald Everett? What? You know, I guess you got some guys that were cut, right? Later, DJ Reed, people like that. But why have they had so many difficulties bringing in players that have significantly contributed and improved the team through free agency? I don't know if that's a Pete issue, a John issue, a Russell Wilson issue. Whatever it is, it's nuts, and it needs to be different this year. NFL free agency can be dangerous. It can be a third rail. You don't want to spend big on players whose reputations are actually better than their actual level of play. But you can also be too conservative, and maybe the Seahawks have proven that. After spending a little on a lot of guys, it has simply not paid off. Staying in the NFL, 16 years after starting in New Orleans, Sean Payton's decided to step away. He says he won't be coaching next year, and his contract goes for three more seasons. So the Saints would have to agree to a trade in order for him to coach elsewhere. We may see him in the media sooner rather than later.
I felt the time was right for me. I felt the time was right, and it's something that I've been thinking about. You know, I think that, look, you have close friends in the industry. I've lost a few close friends in this industry in the last two or three years. And also, forget football. There's other things. I looked at it as an opportunity also to see my kids more, to travel some more, to get in better shape.
Oh, that's a good idea. If I were to stop coaching, that's the first thing I would want to do as well, man. Those guys have a tough life in terms of trying to eat healthy and get to the gym. I mean, there's a gym outside their office, but still. When I think of the Saints, I feel like there's before Sean Payton and now after he arrived, right? It coincides a lot with Drew Brees being there also. They took a franchise that had never been particularly successful, elevated to must-watch status and a Super Bowl victory. I don't know how things would have gone if Brees had ended up in Miami with Nick Saban, but I do know that the combo with Payton was pretty magical. It now makes the ninth open head coaching job in the league. Nearly a third of the league needs a head coach. Defensive coordinator Dennis Allen may be the logical replacement. He has some head coaching experience in Oakland.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Congratulations to David Ortiz.
Hello, I'm trying to reach David Ortiz, please.
This is David Ortiz.
Hello, David. This is Jack O'Connell with the Baseball Writers Association of America. I'm calling you from Cooperstown, New York, to let you know that the Baseball Writers have elected you to the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yes!
Yeah, it's a good, exciting moment for Big Poppy. Apparently, he was there with his family and Pedro Martinez.
As one does.
If I had a chance to get elected to the Hall of Fame, that's exactly who I'd want with me as well. Give me my family and Pedro. He's the lone player going into the Hall of Fame this year. Just barely cracked the 75% threshold in his first year of eligibility. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Sammy Sosa, Curt Schilling, others failing to make it in their last attempt. I know much of the conversation will be about who didn't get in, and for good reason. Bonds and Clemens especially are Hall of Famers in my book, but it shouldn't detract or distract from Ortiz. The man was amazing. As much as anyone, I think of what he did for the Red Sox to win it in 04, break the 86-year curse. His walk-offs in games 4 and 5 of the ALCS that year against the Yankees were legendary. He carried the team to World Series victory in 2013. His regular season numbers were enough to get him in, but the fact that his 931 career OPS went up to 947 in the postseason, that's pretty incredible. And then throw in what he said and how he handled the marathon bombing in 2013, cursing on the air to say it was our bleeping city, he said, only to have the FCC say, "We stand with Big Poppy." That's incredible. You don't hear stuff like that. He did it all with a smile and joy that we should admire in any athlete. A Hall of Famer by any measure. Meanwhile, continued progress yesterday between the league and the union as they race to get a deal done before the unofficial February 1st deadline that would keep spring training intact. The league compromised on a few core issues, offering to raise the minimum salary, though not as far as players would like, and warming at least to the idea of a bonus pool for exceptional players that are still arbitration eligible. They are also still open to a draft lottery. Still nothing close to a deal, but I think the best news here is that they're also going to work on some non-core economic issues in the hopes that once a deal is struck, they can get it done even more quickly. I think that is great to hear.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, tough night for the Kraken. They played with a lead much of the night, but not able to hold on. Fall 4-2 to Nashville. Goals from McCann and Larson, but Philip Grubauer not very sharp in net. I think there's a few that he would like back. Kraken head out of the road now. They will be in Pittsburgh tomorrow. NBA action, Joel Embiid on a tear right now. 42 points last night as Philly tops New Orleans. Warriors back on track, blowout win over Dallas. Nothing compared to, though, to what Boston did to Sacramento. 128-75, that's a 53-point slaughter in Sacramento. Yikes. That's everything you need to know. So that quarter past every hour. Sorry, I follow my guy Carmichael Dave. He's the morning host on our sister station down in Sacramento. So I'm sort of a Sacramento Kings fan. Like, I don't watch the NBA, but I kind of watch and pay attention to what's going on with the Kings just because of him. And they were pretty embarrassed last night. 53 points at home? That's not good. That's a molly whopping, as they would say. That's rough.
Haven't they been kind of embarrassing for a while now?
Oh, yeah, no, like most of their history. Yeah, and certainly since Chris Webber left, they've been like just a completely awful, terrible franchise.
Remember liking Bibby and Webber back in the day?
Yeah, yeah, Jay Will, right, when he was there, Jason Williams. Yeah. But yeah, they've been just horrific as a franchise, just terrible. But he's funny. If you want to follow Carmichael Dave, I promise he's got a good-looking Frenchie. When the off chance that the team wins, he brings his Frenchie out and calls him Victory Puppy, and sometimes he dances a little bit. So, yeah, there's some benefits being a Kings fan, just, you know, from afar, obviously.
Question for you with the baseball meetings. We had 2 in 2 days.
Yep.
Right? I want to say that it's been minor progress, but depending on who you follow on Twitter, it seems to be.
I would say there's been major progress.
All over the place.
I would say the progress has been major.
Okay.
No, they have not agreed to anything, but they've at least started to move in each other's directions. They're giving, like, compromising signs. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, hey, I might be willing to compromise here. Hey, I might be willing to compromise there. I think that's a great sign.
Okay. And so they didn't set another meeting, right? They're not going to meet
today? I don't think they have a meeting set. They're supposed to work now on some of these non-major issues for a couple of days while the sides go back and kind of think about what they want to do next. But I would guess they will meet sooner rather than later because I think they do have some legitimate desire to at least try to get this done before they start banging spring training games.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask you is where's the salk meter on your hope for them starting on time?
Let's see. Be reporting on time low. Spring training games on time, moderate. Regular season on time, fairly high.
Okay.
I would say that's where I'm at right now. All right, let's talk to Joe Fan, get his take on what's going on, what we saw over the weekend. Again, I don't think it's Wednesday, right? And I don't think anybody's fully recovered from what we all saw over the weekend. Just an incredible slate of games and unbelievable action. And I think a lot of it absolutely draws back to these Seahawks. We'll talk to Joe about that coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Our buddy Joe Fan joining us as he does Tuesdays at 8. Hi, Joe. How we doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great, Mike. How are you, sir?
Well, I think you had a better weekend than me. I had picked, almost every game wrong. I got the Chiefs right, and it looked like I was about to get that one wrong. I was just like on the verge of 0-4, and even though I didn't really care too much about any of the games, the fact that I had picked them here in our show caused me to root for them like my life depended on it, and I'm not really necessarily proud of that fact. It's just sort of how it went. And yet you had some of the foresight. You thought that this was a road dog kind of weekend. What kind of got you to that spot?
Yeah, I just thought these games, one, wild card weekend, while the games weren't great, they set up the four best matchups we could have hoped for. And there's a lot of times like I look at games and I say, man, it feels like a coin flip. So why not take the plus money? And so that was this kind of the rudimentary explanation of it. And there's more behind it. But you know, I just liked every underdog in a situation where they had a good chance to win. Now, it's no guarantee. And I think no matter what side you were on in three of the four games, you could argue you were on the right side. I think the one side where there's really no argument to be made, the Rams were the right side in that game. And they tripped all over themselves. to let the Bucs back in it and almost lose that game. But for my money, the Rams were the right side there, and that was the game I felt most confident in going into the weekend. The other ones, I mean, you watch the Bengals-Titans game, you watch the Niners-Packers game. You know, if you were on the Packers, it's hard to say, gosh, I got that one totally wrong. I mean, it was a sort of a fluky, weird game. The blocked punt, all of it is just so bizarre. And then, of course, the Bills-Chiefs game, where both teams seemingly won that game in the last 2 minutes three different times. You know, I'm not necessarily standing up here and saying, gosh, of course, I knew it all along. The Bills were the right team, whatever. So, anyways, my strategy with betting is if I feel like it's a true coin flip, to me, it just makes sense to take the plus money. And I won some. I did pretty well in Wild Card weekend. And I said, let's roll the dice and then try to make it 2 for 2.
What, after watching this weekend, I'm assuming that, like most people, you came away thinking that the Bills and Chiefs were the two best teams in the league. If you did, who do you think is the third best team?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think the Rams, when they're playing well, are the third best team. But we've seen so many times this year where they look terrible. And whether it's the Matt Stafford interceptions or pick sixes, he led the league in both categories this year. Whether it's the defense not being able to get home inexplicably, given the pass rush they have there. I mean, Jalen Ramsey getting burned deep is not something you expect to see, even though Mike Evans is one of the best receivers in football. I mean, the fumbles, they can't get out of their own way sometimes. And you look at the Niners going back to SoFi for the second time in 3 weeks, the Rams were up 17-0 against them in week 18. And if they don't choke down the stretch, the Niners aren't even in the playoffs. And so, you know, it's hard to say because, you know, to me, I think the Niners are a dependable team because you know where their weaknesses are, you know where their strengths are, and those sort of show up every single week. And it might not always be the prettiest brand of football, but, you know, that's a dominant running game that's very multiple, that has different looks and people involved. And Deebo Samuel is a one-of-a-kind playmaker. Their defense has been far better than I think expectations, you know, given the talent in the secondary. Obviously, you know, you have Fred Warner there, but Dee Ford hasn't been a factor. And Samson Ebukam has been a revelation for them. And, of course, Nick Bosa is an absolute star. And you're looking at, you know, D'Amico Ryans as assistant coach of the year and a potential head coach candidate the year after replacing Robert Saleh. So, you know, I still think the Niners are a safer bet than a lot of other teams because they are, their formula is more easily replicable.
You want to change the overtime rules?
Yes, absolutely. At least in the playoffs, you know, it's like in hockey where you go to a shootout, but then in the postseason you play it till somebody scores. And I think you have to have some sort of rule like that, where in the playoffs you just can't have a defense that's been on the field chasing down Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce for basically the last 3 minutes of the game, given how quickly the Bucs scored, and then go back out there, and if they get scored on, you lose. I mean, what are the numbers? I think it's like 28% is your odds of winning go up.
Well, in the playoffs, they're 10-1. In the playoffs, the teams that won the coin toss are 10-1.
Yeah, so you have to do something.
What do you make of this? Is sort of because of these people who are sort of arguing against it, I struck upon another potential solution. What if you kept the same rules, but rather than a coin toss, you gave the opening kickoff to the team that had home field advantage? Essentially saying what you've done in the regular season got you a higher seed, and so this is the advantage you get due to that.
But it still leaves you in a situation where Josh Allen plays the game of his life, one of the best playoff performances we've ever seen. I mean, full-on superhero mode, where the guy didn't make a mistake pretty much throughout the entire two games he played. You know, there are only four of the drives the Bills had this postseason ended in punts. There were zero turnovers, and they lost a game. I mean, it's insane. So, to me, that doesn't solve the issue. The biggest thing I got in terms of pushback on, you know, changing overtime was, well, defense wins championships and you should be able to go get a stop. And it's like, I agree with you, but why shouldn't the other team also have to get a stop?
Right.
And so when you look at how dominant good offenses are these days, yeah, like you said, you know, 10-1 when the team gets the ball first. I mean, it's overwhelmingly in favor of one side. So why wouldn't you want to change what appears to be an obviously damaged system?
Yeah. Talking to Joe Fan here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And of course, Joe, a long time covered the Seahawks on that beat, et cetera. Joe, if you were Pete Carroll and you were watching the games this weekend, what were you thinking? What would you have taken away from them?
We don't have enough star power, I think would be my biggest takeaway. You know, I guess you watch the Titans game and, you know, you look at the Titans lost that game, but they had 9 sacks and a defensive line that was absolutely dominant. So even the games that weren't necessarily pretty, I don't think you're looking at the Seahawks and saying they're on par with that team. Now, you argue, obviously, you go back to week 2 where, you know, the Seahawks should have beaten the Titans and had them, you know, had a comfortable lead in the second half after dominating the first half. But I think ultimately you look at some of these teams and say there's a lot of room to grow from a talent perspective. And this leads us back to the conversation we had last week and the week before that of how do you get there? And it's just going to be fascinating to see the route they take in order to get there. But I also think, you know, you watch that game and you say, Russell Wilson, as good as he is, and he's still great in my opinion, he's not Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes anymore. And I mean, those two guys are a full leap and bound ahead of him, in my opinion. And that might ruffle a lot of feathers in Seattle, people who would argue otherwise. But I don't know how you can watch that game between the Bills and Chiefs and think otherwise.
Well, I can with Patrick Mahomes. I would agree. I mean, he's now done it for 4 years. He's been ridiculous, right? Okay, so yes, I'm going to put Patrick Mahomes in that group. Josh Allen, for that game and maybe the last 2 games, yes, and he's had a couple of good years. But you got to prove it, I think, more than doing it for a few good games before I'm going to tell you you're better overall than where Russ is at.
He was an MVP candidate last year. I mean, he had stats that would warrant winning MVP a year ago.
Yeah, he got smoked in the playoffs.
And
I mean, like
Patrick Mahomes.
Well, okay, but he still got smoked in the playoffs. I mean, like at some point you've got to deliver a little bit more.
Smoked because they've played 3 games and the point differential is 2 in favor of the Chiefs. So I don't think getting smoked is probably the fairest assessment of what happened in that game a year ago in the playoffs. You know, so I think Josh Allen, his ability, his athletic ability, his arm talent, and now what you've seen is being able to show up in big games. I certainly, without question, would take him over Russell Wilson.
Well, I'm not quite there yet, and I'm not. That's partly, you know, some of my dislike of Josh Allen, but partly it's just the like.
Ah, there it comes.
Well, that's fine. I'm willing to admit the bias, but it's also partly like we've seen this before. Cam Newton does it for a little while, and RG3 does it for a little while. And Andrew Luck does it for like you gotta kind of withstand it for a little bit and win a few of those big ones before I'm fully going to grant that to you. Russ has been doing this for a decade, been to 2 Super Bowls, won 1, all of the things that he's done in the course of his career. But beyond that, let's even sort of grant the point. If you're Russ, what are you thinking watching these games over the weekend?
Well, real quick to your point, we're not saying, or I'm not saying that Josh Allen has a better resume and is a more accomplished quarterback than Russell Wilson. I'm saying in this moment, if you were given the pick to start your franchise right now and you're given Josh Allen or Russell Wilson, I'm taking Josh Allen. That's the argument. It's not that Josh Allen has surpassed what Russell Wilson has accomplished, who's done it for a decade. Absolutely not. Not even close. So that was where I would just differ from, I feel like, what you were explaining. What is Russ thinking? Probably a little bit. I mean, I'm sure it's the same thing we saw last year when he was the Super Bowl, sandwiched between Sierra and Roger Goodell, looking miserable in that suite at Raymond James Stadium. You know, you see him tweeting about it and, wow, this is crazy, all these things, you know. But I'm sure he's seeing the conversation and he's seeing the social media chatter of Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson is going to be better than Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning ever was. And all, I mean, it sort of feels like the conversation has passed Russ by because he hasn't been playing in the divisional round or later in these playoffs for so long. And so while he's still appreciated as a great quarterback, you know, to me, I think he's already seen as this quarterback who's on the back nine and still great and still going to command a huge, you know, haul in a trade if that were to go that way, or still a guy who will lead the Seahawks to playoffs again. But you know, he is not the face of the league from a marketing standpoint anymore. I mean, it is the two guys you saw on Sunday at Arrowhead. And I think that probably bothers him and probably lights a fire once again going into this offseason.
So let's say he's got the fire lit. Does he internalize it and also say, hey, look at how Joe Burrow is being talked about? And he was sacked 9 times with a sieve of an offensive line. He still managed to throw for 350 and win the game. Or does he do what he did last year, which is to sort of become a little jealous of some of the other things that other people have and start saying, maybe I need to go somewhere else in order to realize this?
Yeah, Joe Burrow, perfect. I can't believe I forgot to mention him. Another great example. I mean, the love of Joe Burrow and the swag and the cigars and all of it. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, we know Russell Wilson's going to work his tail off throughout the offseason regardless, and he's going to post all the videos so we can see it and just to be sure. But yes, he's also human. And so the same things that bugged him last year and led to the exploring of what else is out there. Is there an opportunity to potentially, or is there a need to go elsewhere? I don't think that's gone anywhere. I don't know how it could have. They were 7-10 and missed the playoffs. So I think a lot of that still exists, certainly.
What a strange spot that the Seahawks find themselves in, honestly, Joe. As you kind of talk through this, there's so many different ways you can look at it. I mean, they're not that far off from the Niners, who they've beaten a couple of times. They've certainly got a better quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo somehow has found himself here into another NFC Championship game, despite being, you know, one of the middle to bottom tier quarterbacks in the league, and yet here he is. It really makes it challenging to try to figure out exactly what direction they need to go next.
Yeah, it's true. Jimmy Garoppolo is a fascinating case study because you're right. He is a mid to bottom tier quarterback, but he just like has somewhat of this like clutch YOLO factor where like he makes these egregious mistakes in every single game and they don't rattle him even a bit, which is, I guess, a good thing. If you're Kyle Shanahan, you would prefer the mistakes don't come and you're not throwing an interception at the goal line at the end of the first half when you're trying to either get 3 points or tie the game up going into halftime. He just comes back and he gets into the huddle and his teammates love him. And he says, hey, let's go win this game. And he finds a way more often than not. I think there is an element of being a winner that he sort of just has. But yes, I agree. Where are the Seahawks and where do they go? And to me, the conversation always goes back to how many guys do they have that are outplaying their contracts? And I think, you and I talked about that during the season. And that to me is the best way to level set of like, where are things and where do they need to go and how, how good can they get with this crew that they've got currently. But I think that's the biggest issue that they face right now is there's just not enough guys who are outplaying what they're getting paid. And that just makes roster construction a huge challenge.
Good stuff. Joe, we got a texter here that says, Joe is radio gold, Alan all day over Russ. So there you go. You're making friends and influencing people wherever you go. We appreciate it. We'll talk again.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much. Appreciate you.
All right, there you go. There's Joe Fan. You can follow him at Joe_Fan. You can see his Joe's one of the things I love about Joe is he's passionate about everything, which I can relate to. Like, I get passionate about a lot of things. He's probably more passionate about sports than I am, which I love. And, like, he'll be passionate about not just Seahawks, Mariners, things like that. Like, there'll be some random college basketball game, and he's super passionate about it and giving a hot take on it on Twitter or whatever. So he's worth your time. He'll tweet about his life in Las Vegas and golfing and stuff like that. So if you enjoy listening to Joe.
That part, you sounded, like, slightly jealous.
The fact that he lives in Las Vegas.
And golfing.
And
golfing.
And that he golfs a lot. Yeah, he, like, joined a country club down there that's pretty awesome. So, yeah, he's young, single, lives in Las Vegas, and gets to golf whenever he wants. So, yeah, I would say I'm a little bit jealous of kind of all of those things. That sounds pretty fun. When we were in my 20s, my best friend moved to Vegas. We were living in L.A., and we had a really rough night in Vegas. Like, only Vegas can provide, right?
Of course.
A really rough night. We thought that we could, we were young, we were like 23, 24 years old. Like, oh, you know what's a great idea? Let's just get a hotel room Saturday night. We'll drive there Friday. We'll stay up all night. We always stay up all night. And then we'll check into the hotel room Saturday morning and we'll save the money on a hotel.
Horrible idea.
In so many ways. So first of all, we all got cleaned out Friday night. All of us. Like, we had gone back to the bank and couldn't get any more out of the bank until like late the next day. So we couldn't even take out more money if we wanted to. Second of all, they don't let you check into the hotel until 4. So when we got to what I believe was the Luxor, and we're like, hey, we're ready to check in.
Fancy.
They're like, yeah, cool. We'll see you at 4 when your room's ready. Sir, it's 7 a.m. We're like, oh, no, we hadn't thought of this. So miserable day. And my buddy, I thought he was going to jump off the bridge. Like, he was in bad shape, man. It was yeah. So anyway, we're driving home Sunday.
Terrible idea. Even my friends wouldn't do that.
Oh, this was such a stupid idea. We'll never do it again. Thankfully, one guy ended up not getting cleaned out, and he took us out to dinner, which was great because otherwise, none of us had any money.
I imagine it being like the Tom Hanks movie where he lives in the terminal. You guys are just like, you're like finding crackers and ketchup packets.
Basically what we were doing. It was terrible. So we're driving home, and my buddy's like, all right, I'm never going to do this again. Get sober. I'm never going to gamble. I'm going to get back together with my ex. Like, I got to clean up my life. Like, hey, buddy, whatever you need, man, I got you. Like, I, you know, you know, your best friend, whatever you need. Like, I'm happy to help. He's like, yeah, I really appreciate it. So we drop him off, and he calls me 4 days later, and he's like, I'm moving to Vegas.
No. What?
So, yeah, his company transferred him. They're like, hey, do you want to move to Vegas? He's like, yeah. So he lived right off the strip for the next 3 years. It was great. We went to Vegas all the time. Now I've been to Vegas for Christmas, for New Year's, for the July 4th, like you name it.
But I've never in my life wanted to live. Like when I go there, I'm glad to go home after my trip. I've never thought I want to live here.
He had a blast. Like when you're a local in Vegas, you kind of do it a little bit differently. He still went to the strip a lot and you know, did pretty well in that world. But
if you're not doing that all the time, it's just oppressively hot most of the time.
Yeah, I like oppressively hot. Like, I'm totally fine with that. I have no issues with it being that hot. So he, you know, he lived in a little, like, apartment complex just off the strip. And, like, he'd meet all kinds of interesting people that worked there, many of whom danced at local establishments around there. And so kind of became friendly with a lot of the sort of, you know, folks that you might find who work and live in Vegas. And it's an interesting crowd who are always up to very interesting things.
A lot more sense. Vegas, more, you're right. Vegas is the only place where you get to the airport 3 hours early. You're like,
I gotta get out of here.
Anyway, I can get on another flight.
And that's if you're allowed on the plane, because I've certainly seen people not allowed on their flight home.
Same.
You know, I haven't been to Vegas in a while, and maybe it's starting to show. Like, I kind of miss Vegas. I love that town, and it just has a really cool, special energy to it. All right, I want to talk about the Hall of Fame this morning. I will say, I'm kind of excited about this. We're not going to get to do it until 8 o'clock. We're going to talk all Mariners today.
Nice.
And, like, actually talking Mariners, not just are they going to play, are they not going to play, not just, like, are they going to be better, are they not going to be better, not in even off-season storylines, not even, like, are they going to get Chris Bryant or not. Like, we're not even going to go there, although that'll probably come up a little bit. But, like, actually starting to delve into this team, I don't know, maybe the last couple days of the lockout kind of starting to teeter a little bit has made me feel like I can start thinking and getting my hopes up for the Mariners again. And you start going through the roster of guys last year, like, they overperformed, right? The Mariners weren't supposed to be as good as they were. They were supposed to be a mediocre to poor team last year, and instead they end up coming a game or two away from making the playoffs. That's because they overperformed their expectation. They also drastically overperformed their expected win result according to their run differential, right?
Yes.
They won an ungodly number of one-run games over the course of the season, and that ends up being a major, major factor for why they're right there in contention. The odds say that they're not going to be able to do that again, right? The odds are that the Pythagorean theorem, or, you know, however you want to look at the run differential, it plays out over time, so that in one season you may see an exception to the rule, but in general, over lots and lots of seasons, it's a good indicator of what kind of a team you have. The Mariners were able to get past it because of a very good bullpen. And some lucky moments. Yeah, Scott Servais had a really good role in it. He played his bullpen well. He leveraged the situations well. I think he just managed a really good season with his bullpen and with the moves that he made on the, like, he had a good year. His players responded, right? He ended up getting some extra, you know, moments and clutch moments from players, etc. But the odds are that over time that will start to even out. And that if you're not able to drastically outscore your opponent most nights, you won't win nearly as many of those games.
Yeah.
So how do they get better than they were a year ago?
Those players that you had last year, if that's going to even out, those players are going to elevate because they were so young. And the upside and the ceilings are so much higher for so many of them that hopefully that evens it out too.
Such a great point. This is the challenge of trying to figure out what the Mariners will do this year. How do you balance guys that overperformed or a team that overperformed versus players that still have yet to reach their potential? Baseball is an up and down game, right? Sometimes you're hot, sometimes you're not. Some years are going to be better than others. And then over time, you end up reaching this average that is your baseball card. Well, which Mariner players do you expect will reach that again this year? Which ones will exceed expectations? And some of those guys should do better than they did a year ago because, as you said, Justin, they're young and improving and learning the game. They were rookies or second-year guys last year, and now it's time for them to kind of start their ascent into being who they're going to be. But history also tells us that just because a guy hit 270 last year doesn't mean he's going to do it again this year.
Oh, yeah.
And that same player could hit 220 this year. And you're going to have to find a way to deal with that loss. Not to mention the fact that bullpens are naturally fickle. as much as I can say, all right, young players get better, I don't trust anybody in a bullpen to do what they did a year ago. Do you? As good as they were, do you trust one player in your bullpen to repeat what he did last year?
One?
I don't trust one. Not one. Like, and it's nothing. It's not about them. It's not a. It's
I
not
want
a
to say Seawald just because I like him so much.
No way. And I love Paul Seawald. I'm rooting for him. And if he does, it would be fantastic for the Mariners. There is not one player in the bullpen I would expect to repeat what they did last year. I do have one candidate to get better from what he did last year. But as I look through it, like you can't expect bullpen pitchers to be better than, or as good as they were a year ago. It's a fickle position. Sometimes they're up, sometimes they're down. It's just the nature of it. And if they were better and more consistent, they'd be starters. So, yeah, Paul Seawald or Casey Sadler, any of those guys.
Steckenrider.
I hope they do what they did last year. But history tells us that they won't all be able to do that. And if that's the case, what does that do to your one-run game differential, et cetera? So trying to figure out how the Mariners not just equal what they did last year, which is the start, but they actually have to improve on it, right? You actually have to get into the playoffs. You actually have to advance in the playoffs. And to do that, they're going to need to outscore their opponents by more than they did a year ago when the run differential was low, but the wins were high. So you got to win on more than just fun differential. You actually need to outscore your opponent every night. So we'll talk a little more about that at 8 o'clock, in addition to what's going on with the Hall of Fame, which I'll get to in a little bit as well. Before we do any of that, a response yesterday from Jake and Stacy. Apparently, we're just going back and forth. Coming up next, I will play you their response, take a little bit of medicine, argue with Jake, and then resolve, because I think we actually agree when it's all said and done. It's next. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.